headlines this hour. Iran says there is nothing secret about the new construction at the Natanz site. The IAEA is also fully informed of Tehran's efforts to tighten nuclear security. Fierce battles raging in villages outside of Ukraine's eastern city of Severodonetsk. Also coming up, firefighters are battling to bring raging wildfires under control in several parts of Spain. This is News. Thanks for joining us. Iran says it has already informed the International Atomic Energy Agency of new construction around Natanz nuclear facility. The spokesman for the Atomic Energy Organization of Iran says that it is moving a centrifuge manufacturing plant to a site near Natanz for security reasons. Behruz Kamalvandi says the relocation is part of measures to tighten security around nuclear facilities. They come after the terrorist operation that damaged the centrifuge plant in Karaj last year. Earlier, the New York Times reported that Iran is constructing new facilities deep under mountains that are able to withstand bunker-busting bombs and cyber attacks. Political scientist Heinz Gertner says Iran's relocation of one of its nuclear facilities was a natural move following a sabotage attack at the site.
It is true that Iran informed the IAEA, and it was clear that after the attack on Karaj, Iran would move its production facilities to another location, and in that case, Natanz. So the IAEA knew it, the US knew it, and Israel knew it as well. Even it's understandable that Iran won't protect its sites against further attacks. We had all these attacks in the past against Iranian nuclear scientists, against nuclear facilities in Natanz in April, and then also on Karaj. So Iran is doing something about these threats. Also, there are always threats in the air. Israel or even the US might attack Iran's nuclear facilities.
Former U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo says the reason why his country assassinated top Iranian General Qasem Soleimani was to protect American resources. Pompeo was speaking with Saudi news network Al Arabiya. He said the U.S. killed General Soleimani to safeguard its assets in Iraq, its people in Syria, and, in fact, Americans all across the world. Pompeo added the assassination was an opportunity to stop what he called an imminent attack on U.S. positions. Soleimani was the commander of the Quds Force of Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps and was killed in January 2020. Pompeo said that Washington had been monitoring Quds Force activities. He also said that Iran had already warned that there would be a war if Washington withdrew from the 2015 deal, moved its embassy from Tel Aviv to Al-Quds, and killed Soleimani. However, Pompeo said the U.S. did all that and there was no war. Political commentator Said Mostafa Khoshesh shared his thoughts on Pompeo's recent remarks regarding the assassination of Iran's top general in 2020.
Well, Pompeo, the former secretary, had better deal with his hiding place. I mean, he's been hiding. He's under a very heavy escort of bodyguards wherever he goes. That's why that's one of the reasons, actually, that they've been demanding from Iran is forgetting about retaliation for Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani. And Iran has reiterated that no matter what happens to the talks, no matter what happens to anything else, the retaliation is for sure. And all those who have done this crime will pay the price. And it's not just Pompeo or his former boss, Mr. Trump, or Brian Hook. There are many others. Iran has released a list of 66 culprits. Some of them have already paid the price, according to some media outlets in the region, and the rest are standing on the list, and there's no doubt about that. But the Ain al-Assad story was just the beginning of Iran's hybrid responses. It's not just the one-story response retaliation. There will be many. On the broader picture, one could say that expelling the United States from the region is one of the ultimate goals. On the strategic levels, but the Ain al-Assad attack or missile strike by Iran was a very symbolic move because it shattered the U.S. awe in the world. Even Chinese and Russians have been admitting that they've been feeling more respect for Iranians and Iran's military powers ever since Iran shut down the Global Hawk and ever since Iran Iranian missiles rained down on an analyst pad.
Now moving to Ukraine, where authorities say fierce battles are raging in villages outside of the eastern city of Severodonetsk. According to a local governor, Russian forces are trying to break through defense lines, but they are failing. He claims Russia does not control the city entirely. For weeks, Russian forces have been trying to seize control of the whole city, which would allow them to advance further in the Donbas area. In the meantime, the city of Donetsk has experienced heavy shelling hitting residential areas. Pro-Russian forces there blame Ukraine, but Ukraine routinely denies carrying out any attacks in that region. Russia says that Ukrainian shelling has cut off power to a coal mine in the region, trapping nearly 80 miners. Johnny Miller is a correspondent joining us from Donetsk to tell us more about what's happening.
Well, the city of Donetsk, where I am right now, I'm in the center of Donetsk, has experienced heavy shelling today. It experienced heavy shelling yesterday, particularly on Monday as well, a huge bombardment. It's every day now, well, every day since I've been here over a month, the Ukrainian army has been shelling civilian areas, but now recently they're shelling the inner city. Only about 500 meters up there, away from me, is where shells landed just about an hour ago. I ask many people around here since I've been here, why does the Ukrainian army shell civilian areas? And let's be clear about that. They're shelling civilian areas. I ask them why. They give one of three answers. First of all, they say that we are Russian-speaking separatists and they don't want us in Ukraine anymore. So they'd rather kill us or make us flee. The second reason they give is that they're doing it almost out of spite or revenge for our success on the battlefield. And the third reason is that they are trying to create a reign of terror in this city in order to stop our support for the pro-Russian forces here. And being in Donetsk today and this week particularly, it really has felt like a reign of terror. To give you an understanding of what it is like on the streets of Donetsk at the moment, I spend most of the day on feet walking around. Most of the apartment blocks here in this city have their doors open. The front doors open specifically so that when they're shelling, passers-by are able to run into the nearest apartment block. Twice today I've had to run in to the nearest apartment block as you hear the terrifying whistle of incoming and explosion nearby. I'm also staying in the last couple of hours at a hotel here because I'm nervous about going back to my apartment because that was hit in the last 2 weeks. Most of my windows, my apartment blocks were blowing out, and that's the experience that people of Donetsk, most people of Donetsk, go through every day here. Now, interestingly, this has only happened in the last 2 weeks, the shelling of the center of the city. And the Donetsk People's Republic say that the reason the center of the city is being shelled right now is because NATO weapons have been able to get to the front line and are able to reach a further distance. Vladimir Putin yesterday in St. Petersburg said that the shelling of Donetsk, the city where I am right now, is only going to stop when Russian forces are able to come down from the north and take on the heavily fortified positions which have been for the last 8 years on the edge of this city. So that's why you're seeing the battle for Severodonetsk at the moment. There's many soldiers in Severodonetsk. There's reports that Ukrainian soldiers report that some of them are surrendering, many civilians there. Both sides blame each other for hindering the evacuation of civilians, but the chemical plant as well is certainly a concern. It's not clear whether Russia has shelled it or whether it's fake news from the Ukrainians, but that's certainly a concern as well.
We're also looking at some of the political statements that have been made, and I'm curious about one that was made by the French President Emmanuel Macron, Johnny, in which he said, do not use statements or stances that would offend the Russian president or humiliate him or what have you. Why would he come out and make statements like that? I'm not too sure I follow the train of thought that he has there.
Well, there seems to be very much a split in NATO, i.e. a split between NATO and the EU. You have one camp, which is a United States, Britain, Poland, some of the Baltic states, which are very much in support of giving Ukraine as much weapons as possible. And no negotiations, let's try to win this on the battlefield. But many in the EU countries, like Macron, for example, These sanctions on Russia have damaged Russia, but not to the extent that the West would have liked. And they've also had massive blowback, particularly to the European economies. Britain, for example, doesn't really rely on Russian gas. Germany does. France does to some extent as well. So you're having this split between EU countries and Britain and America and Poland. And so Macron's more favorable remarks in terms of Russia and Putin, perhaps an indication that some European countries are pushing Ukraine to negotiate, whereas other NATO countries are pushing for Ukraine not to negotiate and to carry on with war. One thing I'll also say is that there seems to be no guarantees by NATO, at least publicly, that their weapons here are not going to be used by the Ukrainian army to shell civilians. The Donetsk People's Republic have made clear they think it is NATO weapons shelling the center of Donetsk, but the NATO countries have not, at least publicly, made any guarantees from Ukraine that their weapons will not shell civilians here.
Thank you for that. Johnny Miller there on the ground from Donetsk. Thank you. The European Commission says the financial crisis in the EU is not being addressed in a coordinated way by the bloc's member states. The cost of living in the bloc is rising by the day, mainly due to sanctions being imposed on Russia over the conflict in Ukraine. Jerome Hughes has more from Brussels.
Millions of businesses across the European Union are struggling to stay open due to unprecedented costs relating to energy and supplies. We spoke to one cafe owner in Brussels.
How is it possible to survive in business? Electricity, oil, gas, and buying in stock is crazy. Prices are crazy. If we do not get more support, we will go under.
Inflation is through the roof. Poverty is on the rise. EU finance ministers have been told there needs to be a more coordinated response.
We continue to support our economies, but not in a universal way, as we did during the COVID crisis, in a more targeted way.
Most EU nations are also members of NATO. An EU army is being developed. Social inequality is a growing problem, but there is no end of money for lethal weapons.
An enormous amount of equipment, ammunition, weapons have already arrived in Ukraine. But of course there are bottlenecks, there are challenges, and there also are some requirements, for instance, for training, for spare parts, to be delivered together with the specific weapons.
Even Pope Francis says the war in Ukraine was provoked or not prevented by the West. Last September, an EU agency outlined the incredible scale of corruption in Ukraine. Despite this, Kiev looks poised to join the 27-nation bloc.
Yes, Ukraine deserves European perspective. Yes, Ukraine should be welcomed as a candidate country.
Economists say sanctions against Russia are going to push up prices in the EU even more.
And some suggest Euroscepticism is going to rise like never before, resulting in the EU project crumbling by the year 2030. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Fierce wildfires are raging across several parts of Spain amid dry and windy conditions, forcing thousands of evacuations. The northwestern province of Zamora, near the border with Portugal and Catalonia in the east, are among the hardest hit areas. The fires have scorched nearly 20,000 hectares of land in the country's northwest. Thousands of hectares of land have also been laid to waste in Catalonia. Regional authorities say that hundreds of firefighters have been dispatched to the stricken areas. Thousands of people have also been evacuated from the ancient city of Toledo, southwest of Madrid. Fires broke out on Wednesday amid an exceptional heat wave that has pushed temperatures close to record highs in the southwestern European state. Temperatures have exceeded 40 degrees Celsius in some northern areas. New information will be submitted to court as WikiLeaks appeals the UK's decision to extradite the organization's founder, Julian Assange. Assange's brother says Britain's decision means basic journalism there is now illegal.
Can be extradited from their country for publishing evidence of war crimes, torture, and corruption. Julian Assange will appeal this decision to the High Court in the UK. He has 14 days to appeal the decision. But what this decision means is that basic journalism, journalism that people do every day, sourcing information, publishing information, is now illegal in the UK. There is great support in Europe, and I think the European Court of Human Rights will stand up for the principles in this case. which is press freedom, the right to do journalism. So we are feeling very, very confident that we will win at some stage.
According to Assange's family, the new evidence, which will be raised on appeal, includes a CIA plot to kidnap and assassinate Assange and how his lawyers were subject to espionage. The abduction and assassination were reportedly plotted when Assange was holed up in the Ecuadorian embassy in London. He is currently held at a prison in London. Washington wants to put him on trial for the publication of confidential files in 2010 and 2011. They revealed how U.S.-led forces killed civilians in unreported incidents in Iraq and Afghanistan. WikiLeaks has called the U.K. government's decision to approve the extradition a dark day for the freedom of the press and for British democracy. French Prime Minister defends his government's arrangement to send some asylum seekers to Rwanda. This after the first flight was blocked at the last minute by the European Human Rights Court.
Every single court in this country said, there was no obstacle that they could see. Nobody in this country, no court in this country ruled the policy unlawful, which was very, very encouraging. We're very confident in the legality of what we're, the lawfulness of what we're doing, and we're going to pursue the policy.
Boris Johnson described the order by the European Human Rights Court to stop the scheduled deportation of a handful of migrants a weird last-minute hiccup. The plan has been criticized by some rights groups and international bodies. The UN's refugee chief has called it catastrophic. The government has been forced to fight a series of legal challenges in London courts aimed at stopping the plan from going ahead. Britain says the plan will stem the flow of dangerous sea trips to the country. The United States is reportedly expanding its military bases in Syria, reinforcing them with air defense systems. Russia's Sputnik News agency says the U.S. is relocating military convoys in eastern Syria, launching modern radar systems on bases already built there. The agency, citing local sources, also says American forces are using grain warehouses in the north as checkpoints and to keep military equipment. The U.S. is keeping its presence in Syria despite strong opposition from the Damascus government. Syria says the U.S. is looting its resources under the guise of fighting terrorism. Syria is also opposed to Turkey's presence on its soil. That has recently come to the spotlight again, as Turkey has announced plans for a military operation in northern Syria. Ankara says it aims to eliminate Kurdish groups, which it views as terrorists. And that is it for World News. Bye-bye for now.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/ParsTodayEN. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/ParsTodayEnglish.
In the limelight.
As the world marches decisively towards multipolarity,
Changes taking place globally are also influencing the internal political mechanisms of Western countries. Dear listeners, this was part of an article written by the staff of Crescent International. This article is published under the heading Media Freedom at Risk as Western Regimes Refuse to Accept Multipolarity. Stay tuned for more. As the world marches decisively towards multipolarity, changes taking place globally are also influencing the internal political mechanisms of Western countries. While supporting the most autocratic regimes abroad over several decades, most Western regimes display the sophisticated approach to managing matters internally. One of the spheres which stood out in stark contrast to policies pursued abroad was the way the media landscape was managed domestically. It is no secret that many political exiles from developing countries are forced to seek asylum in Western countries. The asylum-granting countries prop up the very regimes from where people are forced to flee. Many exiles also often set up media platforms and other organizations in host countries to project their point of view denied them at home. While supporting brutal regimes in places like Saudi Arabia, Egypt, and the fake regime of Israel, Western regimes permit media organizations and platforms critical of those very regimes to operate. This allows Western regimes to whitewash their support for the most repressive and journalism-intolerant regimes abroad. Thus, NATO regimes are able to present themselves as freedom-loving champions of human rights. However, recent developments indicate that such methods of operation are in the process of undergoing a drastic shift. Over the past several months, news from Germany, Austria, and Britain signaled that the voices of exiled communities in the West may no longer enjoy the sophisticated veneer of media freedom presented by Western regimes. When viewing the troubling referenced news in isolation, this may be dismissed as three cases. However, the speed with which many independent countries' media outlets were cut off by Western establishments using the crudest of ways shows that there is a very real possibility that the much-touted freedom of speech and media is likely to be curtailed in most Western countries. Such clampdown may be seen partly as rational regression. Hitherto, many Western regimes could afford to allocate some operational space to alternative voices so long as Western political, economic, and military dominance continued globally. Russia's special operation in Ukraine and the West's complete failure to topple the governments in Syria, Venezuela, and other independent countries reflect a new global reality. Coupled with worsening economic conditions in many Western countries, the economic dominance of China and Washington's decline of influence in South America are signs of the eclipsing Western-dominated world order. As with all declining systems, Western powers, too, will likely resort to policies to try and maintain their global dominance. NATO's response to Vladimir Putin's demands prior to his launching military operations in Ukraine, the Western media's constant demonization of China, and the unconditional backing of the Zionist regime's aggression, along with many other pre-multipolar world order policies are clear signs that Western regimes are unwilling to accept the shifting global realities with grace. NATO policies in Europe, China, and Africa show that they will continue to rely primarily on brute force to maintain their global hegemony. The big question is, will they succeed?
The first methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
Ya ayyuhal ladhina amanu, O you who believe, ista'inu bis-sabri was-salah.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, now we invite you to listen to a speech by Sheikh Hamza Sodagin.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. One of the verses of the Holy Quran that is good to remember every now and then is the verse in Surah Baqarah that we know as Ayatul Kursi, the verse of the throne. Al-Kursi comes from the portion or the passage in the verse that says, وَسِعَ كُرْسِيُّهُ السَّمَاوَاتِ وَالْأَرْضِ. Kursi is the throne. His throne, وَسِعَ, it's inclusive of, it's vast, inclusive of the heavens and the earth. The verse is mentioned to be a verse for us to repeatedly read. The Quran generally is a book that within it God advises us to repeatedly read. Read the various chapters, the various verses. However, there are certain chapters and sometimes verses that have been singled out and we are told to repeat them. In certain occasions, for instance, we're told sometimes in regarding to particular chapters, in certain locations, as part of certain deeds, we're told to repeat certain verses or chapters of the Quran. Ayatul Kursi is one of those verses that we have in various prayers, deeds of the various sorts, and also just generally to mention, and that's why the verse is so well known. As soon as you say Ayatul Kursi, pretty much everybody knows what verse or sometimes verses you're thinking of. Although the verse Ayatul Kursi means one verse, it's the first verse of the three that are generally recited, and the one that is focused on is the first verse. This tells us that the meanings of this verse are ones that need to be remembered. And we need to be reminded of. The Quran is a dhikr. It reminds us of the truths that are in it. These are not words to read as some form of magic spell or something where the words just being pronounced have the effects. The reason why we're told to read them is because we are to remind ourselves of the meanings in it. And as much as we think these are simple concepts, for instance, the most central concept in Ayatul Kursi being the concept of Tawheed, the fact is we have not been able to internalize the concept of Tawheed and to make our minds and hearts function based on this principle. We don't think based on Tawheed, we don't act based on Tawheed, we don't feel based on Tawheed, we don't. This is just a very simple fact. We refuse to even accept Tawheed in the full sense of the word. We refuse to accept it. For example, as soon as any speaker, anyone suggests that in regards to sustenance, rizq, God is the only one that provides it. He generally has said that He will give sustenance to every single one of His creation. He has specifically mentioned that if you do what He says, He will give you sustenance from where you didn't expect. As soon as you say that, there's always a but you need to plan. You need to do this. You need to do that. So I need to do something. I am also responsible for it. As soon as that word or any thought similar to that comes, that simply means refusal to accept that God is the sole source of sustenance. We refuse to accept it. Any time where believers in hardships, in difficulties, want to go towards things that they have been forbidden of. For example, the believers that were struggling during the time of the Prophet wanted to go and beg the disbelievers. When they saw that they're in hardship, they're under attack by the disbelievers, they would want to tone down their language against the disbelievers in order to spare themselves, spare their lives. What is that thought process based in? It's based in polytheism, not tawheed, not the oneness of God. If God is the only source of security, if God is the only source of everything, and His commands are what they are, and you need to go by them, refusing to go by them with the justification, the excuse that, but we can't do this, this will happen, this will shut down, that will shut down. Anything other than what God has said, any explanation outside of what God has. If somebody says, well, in normal circumstances, that's what God says to do. In these conditions, God says for us to do something else. And here's the reference, here's the verse, here are the ahadith. We'll look at them, say, okay, if God said whatever He says, that's fine. But it's never that. It's just this assumption that, well, I need to protect myself. That's shirk. That's shirk. God protects. إِنَّ اللَّهَ يُدَافِعُ عَنِ الَّذِينَ آمَنُوا وَاللَّهُ خَيْرٌ حَافِظًا وَهُوَ أَرْحَمُ الرَّاحِمِينَ. We're in a circle gathering, believers there. One brother mentioned that they have officially said, these think tanks, that for Iraq, the only way forward for the United States is to take out Atlas Sistani and al-Hashd al-Sha'bi. And they were saying, well, you know, this is worrisome and so on and so forth. What's going to happen? وَاللَّهُ خَيْرٌ حَافِظًا وَهُوَ أَرْحَمُ الرَّاحِمِينَ. God is the one that has protected His religion despite all odds and whatever conditions there has been. Whoever He needed, He wanted to protect and protect His religion through, He has protected. He gave the Imam of our time over 1,000 years, over, I think now it's approaching 1,100 or 1,200 years. If He wants to preserve Islam through a person, He will preserve Islam through that person. If He wants to preserve Islam without that person, He will preserve Islam without that person.
You're listening to Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This program entitled Minbar. Our email address is englishradio@irib.ir.
رحيم كريم عظيم عليم حليم
حكيم متين غفور شكور ودود قيوم رؤوف صبور مجيد اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد يا مؤمنين صلوا عليه.
Is there any other way to get familiar with Islam besides mainstream media? Try IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
By late May, the situation had become so critical that some American states, including New York, declared a state of emergency due to the shortage of infant formula, which compelled the U.S. president to order the import of the basic commodity with military aircraft from countries such as Germany. We now present you an article written by Mohammad Mahdi Abbasi, an Iranian researcher focusing on American affairs. The piece is titled, from Operation Fly Formula to Biden's popularity plunge. Welcome to US 2022. Operation Fly Formula may sound odd to you, but it is actually the name picked by US President Joe Biden and the White House for an operation launched to speed up the importation of infant formula to the country. Under the operation, the US Department of Defense, the Pentagon, is partnering with other departments to pick up overseas infant formula to help ease the dire shortage inside the country. More than 100,000 pounds of this basic commodity has been imported to the United States in several stages. But what is behind the formula shortage that has forced the so-called world's largest economy to resort to imports? It was 14th of May when photographs and reports about a severe shortage of infant formula in the United States went viral for the first time. The figures during the first days of the crisis show that in 25 states, 40 to 50% of baby formula products went out of stock, and in many regions across the states, more than half of the stores were out of the product. By late May, the situation had become so critical that some states, including New York, declared a state of emergency due to the shortage, which compelled the US President Joe Biden to order the import of the basic commodity with military aircraft from countries such as Germany. Following the nationwide shortage, the Biden administration faced a barrage of criticisms as the dire situation cast doubt on the administration's competence more than ever. House Republican Conference Chair Elise Stefanik delivered remarks on the horrific nationwide baby formula shortage, saying that President Biden has continued to pass the buck. Children, babies, have been put to bed hungry, while parents are desperately trying to find alternative formulas that are often difficult to procure. This is not a third world country. This should never have happened in the United States of America. Damian Lee, an American professional basketball player, also said, "It's sad. The world that we live in, it's easier to get a gun than baby formula right now," referring to the shooting in Uvalde, Texas, which left 19 children and two schoolteachers dead. "That's unbelievable in this country that we live in." The criticism continued even after the shipments of infant formula arrived in the United States. When 78,000 pounds of infant formula arrived in the US from Germany, Republican Derek Van Orden, a candidate running for Wisconsin's 3rd Congressional District, said, "When the richest country in the world has to use military aircraft to import baby formula, something is wrong with the government. Biden has broken America." Former US President Donald Trump also did not miss the opportunity to blame the current administration, and in a statement, criticized the formula shortage. Issued through his Save America Political Action Committee, Donald Trump said in his statement, "The Democrats are sending another $40 billion to Ukraine, yet America's parents are struggling to even feed their children." The former president further said, "No one is talking about the baby formula shortage in the United States, which he said is a national disgrace. It is unthinkable that in the year 2022, American families are unable to get baby formulas for their children." We'll be right back. You may wonder how the United States has reached such a critical situation in supplying infant formula. To answer this question, various factors contributing to this issue need be mentioned, including the global food supply chain crisis, which is primarily attributed to the coronavirus pandemic and the closure of important baby formula factories in the United States. Interestingly, four major companies control 90% of the infant formula industry in the United States today, with Abbott factory being the biggest producer. The large company shut down its Michigan factory due to possible bacterial contamination, resulting in the infection of four infants who consumed its products, further deepening the baby formula shortage crisis across the United States. Nearly a month after the nationwide crisis in the United States, store shelves in many American stores are still bare of baby formula. Recently, Blair Hayes, an author and a mother, wrote in The Guardian that she traveled to four different cities to find a canister of formula for my baby. In the meantime, the US President Joe Biden said in an interview recently that he was not personally aware of the severity of the infant formula shortage until early April. That interview, along with other contradictory remarks by Biden administration officials, further fueled public anger directed at US federal government and dealt a final blow to the lifeless body of Biden's popularity. According to numerous reliable polls, Joe Biden's approval rating has dropped to below 40%, and the continuation of such a critical situation, of which inflation and formula shortage are merely a portion, can come at the cost of a crushing defeat for the Democratic Party in the 2022 elections, or even Joe Biden's resignation. A new opinion poll has found that most Americans say the economy and inflation are the primary factors in determining how they will vote for Congress in the midterm elections this November. U.S. inflation rose to its highest level in the past 40 years in March and currently is hovering around 8%. American consumers have been significantly affected by the rising cost of basic goods and services, including gas and food. In the latest ABC News Ipsos opinion poll, more than 80% of the American public said the economy and inflation were an extremely or very important factor shaping up their vote this fall. President Joe Biden has received low approval ratings for his handling of these key issues, suggesting trouble for the president and the Democratic candidates ahead of the midterm elections. The opinion poll found that slightly more than a third of the American public, 37%, approve of how Biden is handling the economy, and even fewer approve of his handling of inflation and gas prices, 28% and 27% respectively. The latest jobs report says that the U.S. economy added 390,000 jobs in the month of May, while the Bureau of Labor Statistics reported on Friday, 10th of June, the unemployment rate remained unchanged at 3.6%. President Biden praised the jobs report as excellent, but acknowledged that many Americans were worried about the status of the U.S. economy. President Biden said, "I know that even with today's good news, a lot of Americans remain anxious, and I understand that their feelings." President Biden has claimed combating inflation is his top domestic priority, adding that the White House has been searching frantically for remedies. The U.S. president claimed that he has taken several steps towards that goal, including by agreeing to tap into the Strategic Petroleum Reserve to generate relief at the pump. President Biden is also considering lifting some tariffs on Chinese products to ease inflation. The ABC News Ipsos opinion poll also found that gun violence and inflation are another two important factors in the upcoming election. 72% of respondents said gun violence was extremely or very important, and 63% said the same thing about inflation. 70% of those surveyed said they think reforming gun laws should be a higher priority than protecting the right to own guns. Only 29% said protecting the right to own a firearm was more important. On Thursday, President Biden addressed the nation in the wake of a series of mass shootings across the United States and said if members of Congress fail to act, the American people will vote them out. He said, "If Congress fails, I believe this time a majority of the American people won't give up. I believe the majority of you will act to turn your outrage into making this issue central to your vote. Enough is enough."
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1930 to 2030 UTC on the following frequencies. 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz for Europe, and 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5, and via the Internet. Our Internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancer's tumor, Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
Ayatollah Khamenei elaborates on six key points of Imam Khomeini's testament. June 4, 2018. Just take a look at the behavior of the American statesman. Their style of speech is similar to that of psychopathic personalities. They make threats. They order assassinations. They slander. They helplessly beg for assistance. They attack the stability and security of other nations. They horse around like a bunch of lunatics. Their behavior is not characteristic of logical, wise politicians. Of course, this behavior is due in large part to the reflection of American failure in different parts of the world. The failure in Afghanistan and Iraq. They entered Iraq and Afghanistan with the promise of freedom, democracy, and human rights. Today, after the passage of several years, the situation in these two countries is so severe that no nation would want to be in the same situation. Insecurity, poverty, increasing domination of arrogant powers, jeopardizing their national interests, disregarding the rights of the people, and the subsequent total failure in achieving the goals they had once announced, or the interior motives they had not announced, are very prevalent there. These failures are reflected in the behavior of American politicians and in their discord, disagreement, and decisions. That is the way the global bullies behave.
دنیای اسلام یک نسخه امروز دارد و اون اتحاد.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
What should one do to confront this bullying? The Imam's advice was to resist. Fortunately, today, all the political groups in the country expressed their loyalty to the path of the Imam. This is an auspicious phenomenon. This was not the case in some eras after the revolution. There were some political movements that openly talked about turning their backs on the Imam's path. Fortunately, today, political groups in our country talk about their inclination towards the thoughts and path of the Imam. One of the most prominent points of the Imam's path, which is reflected in his testament and all his remarks, is the need for determined resistance against covetous, arrogant powers. The Iranian nation and all the different political groups, as well as the elites inside the country who are loyal to the Imam and his thoughts and decisions, must safeguard this stance with full strength.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website www.parstoday.com/en.